that CPFI is now undertaking that of reviewing the organizational structure of CPFI. If say we were deciding to absorb CPFI into the department, some of the positions that we're talking about would not have been necessary because it would have formed part of CPFI and therefore you might not need an executive director. However, a decision has already been taken to say we do need CPFI as an entity outside the department, because if you absorb it into the department, it will be responsible for setting norms and standards and not be implementers of innovation in terms of replicating solutions and so on and so forth. They are now involved in the process of submitting a reviewed organizational structure, which looks into the mandate of CPSI. We also have agreed with the minister that they will have to submit also a submission that says these are the posts that must be filled soonest than others. I've also recommended to the minister that it will be proper that we appoint the executive director permanently so that as we appoint other staff, he or she is part of that process. And that is the movement we're waiting for, that submission. On the organizational structure, we have seen it. We have therefore directed the CPFI, in fact, the submission is in the office of the minister. I've recommended that they've got now to undertake the normal process of approving any reviewed organizational structure, which will mean that it goes to the Department of Public Service and Administration, and therefore the minister look into that, not from a point of being an executive authority responsible for CPFI, but as the MPSA minister responsible, and therefore that outlook sort of approach in the reviewed organizational structure of CPFI. We are in that process. We've looked at the funding model. We've looked at the business model of CPFI, the skills that they require, added to that. And also they are in constant conversation or communication with National Treasury, because there might be a need for more budget for CPSI if it has got to perform its work as expected and, of course, its mandate as expected. We are in agreement that we cannot do away with an innovation center at this time of the year or age in South Africa and in the world where you need innovation. So that is why we have had some of these vacancies taking long to fill. I want to believe for sure, Chairperson, that when we come back in future, we'll either be saying we've advertised the post, we've shortlisted, we've interviewed, or we have appointed, depending on when exactly we're going to come back to you. In terms of the regulations, for a post to be filled, when you start the process up to the end, it can take up to 6 months or not more than a year. However, we will want, as soon as the process starts, to shorten the process so that we have people appointed. But what is accepted is that a duration that it will take. So I just want to say that, and that is why we've had these posts being vacant for quite some time, because when you review and you deciding on where the structure or the center should be or any institution should be, you cannot at the same time be appointing people, because what if you will not need those positions? But now there is a concrete decision to say we need CPSI, which I believe is an important decision, and we need it not within the Department of Public Service and Administration, which is important. We have also said, unlike what it is now where it is occupying offices within the department, we have said they've got to start now looking for a center so that physically speaking, they are a center. They have got an innovative center where public servants can come and see the solutions that they are making or whatever, in order for them to be a center, not just offices and so on. So that has already been said, and we are encouraging them to start engaging with the Department of Public, DPWI, so that that process can now unfold. Because for now they are having offices, we say there must be a center, and that decision has already been taken. And that is where we are at this moment, Chairperson. Coming to, and that is why then we have those vacancies, and we hope that as decisions are being taken, we will be filling the post. We also feel that there are critical posts that must be filled as soon as possible. On questions that were asked by Honorable Tim, I want to believe he said he's in depth, and therefore I wish those questions were directed to the Department of Public Service and Administration than CPSI. I'm not very sure, Chair, whether you'll want me to respond to them. I wasn't ready to answer those questions. However, if the questions are about, for instance, what we are doing about officials that are doing business with the state, we have on several occasions been responding to this question. We have explained that we get information from PESA, but also we're getting information from the center that keeps records of people that are owning companies, and we get it from Treasury as well. And we have indicated that we have written to departments to alert them about the fact that in your department or in your province, there are so many officials that, in terms of the information, are doing business with the state. We also submitted in that information to SAPS with the names of officials to say the SAPS must look into that. But we have also said to departments they must assist SAPS by investigating all those issues. SAPS came back to us with a much reduced number after checking everything. And we have had meetings with SAPS, with NPA, to say then those officials that are confirmed to be doing business with the state, they must be charged criminally. But also we have informed departments that over and above this being a criminal, offense, it is also a misconduct, and therefore they must be charged within departments for a misconduct, and disciplinary process must unfold. And we are in constant communication with departments. I must indicate that I think about 2 weeks ago, the Minister of Public Service and Administration, together with the Deputy Minister and the DG, we addressed FOSAD, which is a committee of DGs, including DGs from provinces, on all these issues. This one included, but delayed disciplinary cases and other issues that we've picked up to say these they require to be addressed by DGs, and we need to get feedback as to what they are doing about those cases. So yes, but I think this question would have been proper if it is directed to DPSA than to CPS. I am just giving highlights, but really it's not a detailed information that I believe the Select Committee will require if we appear before them as DPSA, being prepared and ready to respond to that, to those questions. On the issue of the role of DAO, I also believe that that should go to DPSA. On the issue of training of officials and minimum requirements, we do set minimum requirements, if I were just to say it in passing, Chair. For instance, if you must apply for a position of a DG or a DDG, you must have an honours degree. And if you don't have, you cannot be employed as a DDG. For instance, we have had some provinces, KZN for instance, shortlisting and interviewing people, and at the time of them being appointed with the promise that they have qualifications, they don't submit the qualifications, and they've not been appointed because the requirement of a DDG or HOD is that a person must have a degree. depending on what we employ a person for. If, say, for instance, we're employing a nurse, surely a nurse must have a qualification, must be a nurse. If you're employing a teacher, the teacher must have a qualification. So yes, there are minimum requirements. In departments as well, depending on the position and the post, there are minimum requirements that are set for each and every position. And of course, that happens in departments. But for those that come to the DPSA, none will pass DPSA if they don't meet the basic requirements. That will be the DGs and DDGs that are approved by DPSA before the department can appoint them. In fact, it is DPSA that will take them to cabinet for cabinet concurrence if it is a DDG and it is a DG. For chief directors, that is actually done by departments, including DDGs and DP and DGs. But for those, for them to be approved, then they come to DPSA for concurrence, and that person must have a minimum requirement. But also, depending on the specific qualifications, we look into that. If, say, for instance, you need a DDG for maritime transport, for instance, that DDG must have a diploma or a degree or an honors degree in maritime as a basic degree, but also as an honors degree, because that is now a specific technical position that DDG must occupy. That is what we are doing. We can do better, but that's what we are doing for now. I think that will be on these questions. But Chairperson, I will say again that they will be answered more specifically with more information if they are directed to DPSA than to CPSI. Thank you, Chair. I will hand over to the acting executive director to respond to our questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Gia. Over to you, executive director.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you. Thank you, DF. Before I start to respond, Honorable Chair, some of the questions will be responded to by my colleagues. So I will indicate who will respond to what. I just want to add from where the DM left off in terms of investigating that before you enter the public service, you have a qualification to be a public servant. There's currently the National School of Government has issued a framework on professionalization, which is out for comments now. And I think that's part of making sure that we hire the right people. I just wanted to raise that and inform honorable members about that development. I think it's still open for comments. In terms of responding, the first two questions, I hope I got them right. The question that spoke to manufacturing and construction. I just want to indicate that as the CPSI, we are actually focusing on innovations that would then improve service delivery. Remember, within the national system of innovation, we have partners like the Department of Science and Innovation that would then focus more on innovations in this space. We work with them, but only relating to service delivery, direct service delivery, like working with hospitals, working with home affairs, with police stations, with correctional services. As an organization, we've not delved into these areas because we know that Department of Science and Technology is in that space as well. They work together with trade and industry. In terms of the other questions, we note the question around that the performance indicators must be broken down to be more specific, to ensure that when you report, one can check the compliance. In terms of e-disclosures, thanks for that, Honourable Member. We will make sure that in our next presentation, actually I've made note of things that we need to include in all our presentations to make sure that we cover all the areas when we report to the select committee. Disclosures for the CPSI for 1920, we didn't have any conflict of interest. I just want to indicate to members that CPSI only has 5 SMS members now because the post of the ED is vacant. And all 5 we did submit, but there was no conflict of interest in all the e-disclosures of the department. The DM has responded to the issue around the moratorium post. in terms of complaints that we get in for FCPSI, it's actually, they're not similar to those that you get to when people call the presidential hotline. The kind of complaints that we get here, they are related to issues around innovation. It will be an official who would say, for instance, some of the complaints that we get would relate to the slowness of GPF in processing pensions, and we would then refer them to the Public Service Commission or to the presidential hotline. If they do come to us, we will then refer them to the right people. I know GPSA as well handles some of these complaints, but I must indicate to honorable members that we don't get a lot of complaints as CPSI regarding that. In terms of why the Audit and Risk Committee chairperson was acting, what happened is that the contract of the chairperson ended before the end of the year. And because we are sharing our audit committee with DPSA, we had to make sure that the processes, it took a bit longer for DPSA to find audit and risk committee members. So that's why we ended up with an acting chairperson, but now we have a full-time chairperson that has been appointed. It was just for a couple of months that it was like that. In terms of mental health records, from the project manager, she indicated to us that up to 50 files were lost per day. So that project actually kept the loss of files. The next few questions will be responded to by the CFO, and let me respond to the vacancy rate question. She will respond to the 30-day payment period. She will also respond to the issue around the damaged car and indicate why we paid an employee a certain amount of money. She will also give stats in terms of women, youth, and people with disabilities. Annette, over to you.
Thank you very much and good afternoon. On the first question on the vacancy rate, the 13% as presented in the annual report is correct. It included three posts that was additional to the establishment that came to an end. And the 6% that was presented in the presentation was more on the fixed post to the establishment. In terms of the 30 days, we've got a very proud record of processing all payments within 4 days after receiving the invoices, and we are continuously trying to improve on that. In terms of the payment that was made to a former employee, it was an arbitration award that was granted to the employees, as well as leave gratuities the employees that left the organization in 2019-20. In terms of the disability rate, we've got two employees, which is representing 7% of the organizational structure, and currently 60% of the full posts are represented by women in the organization. I think that was all my questions. Thank you.
The last one about the damaged car. Why was it not insured?
Oh, sorry, yeah. The damaged car, the Treasury regulations doesn't allow departments to take out insurance for hired vehicles because of the small amount to it. The losses are assessed if they occur. Thank you.
Thank you, Annette. And Mr. Piers Conrad, who's responsible for research and innovation, will respond to the ICT challenge. He will respond to the digital skills, explain what hackathons are, and also give honorable members a bit of information about the Home Affairs project. Over to you, Piers.
Good afternoon, Chair, Deputy Minister, and honorable members. Just before I answer the questions on the hackathon and ICT capacity, if the host could perhaps just allow me to share my screen. then I will be able to demonstrate to members the work in progress on Home Affairs. Thank you very much. I will share now. With regards to hackathons, Chair, in essence, it is a coding marathon. We bring together youth. Those would be still students. We have youth as young as 15, 16 participating still in school, as well as postgraduate students who then over a period of usually 48 hours right through the night would work on a specific challenge in a team set up, and then they are supported by a number of mentors. We use the hackathons to have practical skills that are transferred, and our role is specifically to focus them on public sector related challenges. So we work with CETA, we work with NEMISA and various departments who are hosting hackathons, and we host our own as well. And then we try and support those solutions to then be developed further. And I think that touches on the question of Honorable Mativula as well, is we have taken a stance to involve our youth and specifically our young innovators developed by the Innovation Hub and the TIAS and our other entities, to bring them in to address the challenges within government so that we don't have to outsource these to large organizations or multinationals or consultancies. It does mean it takes longer, and the Home Affairs is one example, which I would like to share with members as well. If you can see my screen, I think it does answer the question of the chair. At the moment, Home Affairs does not know what the service delivery status is in each office. So what we're trying to build with them is real-time monitoring of the status, and we're currently doing that in two offices, Bronkhorstspruit and Pretoria CBD, and we are looking at their overall compliance in relation to their own set standards, risk issues which are normally picked up by the Auditor General, and then their service delivery compared to their standards, as well as value-added services and the operational efficiency. They've measured how fast a process should happen, and we simply measure then. It is a project that has human elements, so there are soft behavioral issues that we need to address. It's not just about building a system. But at a glance, Home Affairs will be able to see on a map what the level of service is. So if there's a green, it's above 70%. They will also see a breakdown at the top best performers, the worst performers. They will be able to read comments from the branch manager, what is happening at the site, and they will be able to break down the services. For example, if you look at the photo booths, are the photo booths operational? What was the percentage lost in service delivery? The queue management system, is that working? And that touches on the question that the chair has asked. Is it functional? What is the operational efficiency? Are staff at counters, the help desk, as well as smaller issues that are normally audited, like is there a first aid kit? Is the safe functional? Is there a meter greeter in place? Are staff wearing name tags, are the emergency contact numbers displayed, etc. So this is the work in progress, and obviously the minister and the senior management will have a different view than, for example, the operational managers. And at the moment, we are busy plugging this into the actual Home Affairs system so that we can withdraw the real-time data. It will also then send alerts, for example, if the ICT system is offline to the relevant people. At the moment, branch managers report after the day, and only 50% of them report, and the monthly reports are also not up to date, hence Home Affairs approach us to deal with this. Chair, I think that is just at a glance. At the moment, we're busy sorting out all the unintended consequences and all the soft issues, so that we have a system that is working and working well. In terms of IT capacity, as you can see with this project, it leverages current business intelligence software and the application thereof. There are security issues and so on. And from our side, we only have one person that has the necessary qualifications and the second person that has a very strong background in the organization. And the CIO is both responsible for internal as well as the service delivery issues. And therefore, there's a need identified by the minister and the deputy minister for us to build much stronger development capacity and ICT capacity. We work with a number of developers within government and solutions they are bringing that are saving government millions, and we're trying to then support. And that touches on the question around awards. Incidentally, in the year under review, Etiquini Municipality won the CPSI Innovation Award for a WhatsApp solution that their engineering department put in place. Normally, it's not their job, but they created this direct communication line with citizens. State entities as well as local government are actively participating in the awards as well as provinces. We travel to the far corners of this country to find very innovative, sometimes not ICT solutions of public servants that are addressing wonderful things, permit systems, online permit systems, emergency vehicle management, simple things like registers for procurement plans for clinics that KZN developed, so that all of these can be dealt with in a paperless environment. Chair, in terms of just one other comment, in terms of the working with the provinces further, we work very closely with the offices of the Premier, but also then with departments that do approach us in terms of either solutions that they have that we replicate, even institutions like hospitals or clinics, and then help replicate that across the public service. Lastly, on the skills, we also work with PCTA to do a little bit forward-looking in terms of what skills the public service would need. And those may not always be qualifications. We know that data skills and data management skills will become very important. And those are not necessarily university degree skills, as is with IoTs, the Internet of Things. Those are sometimes very technical skills that we are working with our counterparts in terms of alerting them to the kind of opportunities that are possible. Hence, our organization also investing in foresight capacity so that we are better prepared also to deal with anticipated crises that are coming our way. AED, I hope I covered everything. I don't know if there's something else that you also want me to address. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Pierre, for covering the point I was going to talk to, but I see you've covered the last two questions that were not answered. Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity for us to respond. I must say we found the discussions quite rich in terms of probing and so forth, and we've learned a lot from engaging with the select committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting Executive Director. I've seen two hands. I want to believe that this will be follow up. Honorable Matevula, this is an old hand.
Thank you very much, Chair, it's an old hand.
Thank you
very much, Chair. Thanks to DM for the response and the team. Chair, I just want to With regard to the replication at Prince Mshiyeni Hospital, my issue, Chair, is that the problem of litigation is a problem that is facing most hospitals. I'm worried that in one financial year, only one hospital has been involved in the replication program. What plans is the NDT having to ensure that all the other hospitals the replication programs also in those hospitals? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Class. Acting Executive Director.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Member, for that question. Actually, I wanted to mention to the Select Committee that through our strat plan, we really realized that we need to replicate rather than one site. What we plan to do is that in the next financial year, we want to work in districts that have been within the district development model, so that when we work within a district, then we are able to sort of go wider than one site. So currently we didn't have any plans with this particular solution, but since Honorable Member is raised it, we'll make sure that this solution is one of the suite of solutions that we are going to implement in the two districts that we are going to work in, so that as CPSI, we are seen to be contributing to the DDM. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting Executive Director. Let me hand over to the GM, just last word, before we continue with our in-house things, while we allow the team to excuse us. Over to you, GM.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson, and we thank you for this opportunity to account to the Select Committee and therefore to the people of South Africa. We've taken note of the issues that you have raised, Chair, and rightfully so for that matter, and we'll be looking into them. We will be looking at everything that you're doing so that we see where there's need for amendments, we will amend. I think they will respond on the issue of replication in one hospital and not others, as it has been asked. But I really want to thank you again for this opportunity. We are old in the department, but not as old as all that. So with each interaction with you, we learn something. And thank you very much.
Thank you, DM. Again, let me on behalf of the committee express our appreciation for the good work that the center is doing under your leadership. We are looking forward to future engagement in terms of further work of the center, particularly with regard to the point raised around funding to other districts in terms of the district development model, which is the rallying cry around the government. So from our side of the committee, we will be interested to get a sense in terms of across the 44 districts, how far are we? But again, your team audit is a step in the right direction. Keep up the good work. We must continue showing that indeed clean audit is possible, like we have done in the last 3 years. Thank you, DM and the team. You are excused.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thanks, Honorable Members. Bye bye.
Thank you. Honorable Members, we have two sets of minutes that we need to deal with. Is the minutes of the 17th of February and the minutes of the 24th of February. On the 17th of February, we hosted the Construction Industry Development Board, where they presented to us in terms of their work. I want to believe that members had an opportunity to go through those minutes. So let's get a sense from the attendance, whether if we left out any member that attended. Those are members of the committee that attended on the 17th of February.
I move for adoption, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Can it go back to the people where, to the attendance?
And let's go back to the attendance, 17th of February. Madam Lapleni?
Yes.
Are you happy? Or you are left on the stage?
No, I don't see myself there.
All right.
I did not miss any...
Yes, yes.
I did not miss any meeting this year. So I don't know why my name is not there.
Thank you. We'll correct that. Let's ask the team to correct that. And I want to believe that with that correction, I just want to make a correction. Yes, Honorable Harris?
On 5.3, it says in terms of the reported employment equity statistics, the committee noted with concern that there is an under representation of Indians and persons living with a disability. It must take out living. It is not politically correct. We don't say people with disability are people living with disability. But also just just a small grammatical error that the first paragraph, yes, and after apologies, the one that says the chairperson of the board, Mr. B.J. Nopunga. If you go down, it says the RSR had aligned its strategic goals and objectives to ensure that all rail industry activities were completed with safety as a main consideration. Further, in the year under review, the RSR continued to prioritize, you should take out the
right. Thank you.
I second the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you.
Before the minutes are adopted, there is something missing from the minutes, and that is that I requested the presenter at the time, I cannot remember the name, unfortunately.
Let's have that clarity. Are we dealing with the minutes of the 17th? I thought we were dealing with the minutes of the 17th. Or this is the minutes? Let's check. Let's go up.
Yeah, it's the 17th, Chair.
Yes,
it's the 17th. Of the 17th.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you are correct. Yeah, no, it's fine. Yes, Tim? Let's
send
to the team, to the
contenders. But I clearly recall in that engagement that I asked the presenter for the statistics on manual authorizations, and they were given up to the end of 2019. And the presenter undertook to give us the statistics on manual authorizations for the year 2020 up to where we are now, or up to the date of that meeting. And so if it can just be minuted, maybe right at the end, that the committee has requested the statistics on manual authorizations from the rail safety, from the RSR, up to February 2020. Just so that we can note down that we did request that. There was no objection to that request. So if we can just note that we did request those statistics, because, Chair, those statistics are very important in terms of rail safety. And they give us an indication of how the system's working, because manual authorizations are only used when the system is broken. So that's why it's important for us to know that.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Tim. I want to believe that it means we need to make a correction of because I see the contents. If honourable members are aware, under comments this, and also the remarks by the chair, it's a rail safety regulator, but now. Under agenda is briefing by the CIDB on its annual report. Can the committee secretary just explain what is happening there?
You can also check it under 5.6.
Under
5.6,
yes. Secretary?
Chairperson?
I want to believe that you need to make correction on the briefing, because it's briefing by the rail safety regulator.
Chairperson?
Yes.
It does say that on the front page. I'm just unaware.
Can you hear me, Chair?
The file is saved as CIDB.
I'm not sure, because the mirror that at least I've presented here on the screen is talking about, you know, the rail safety regulator on the 17th.
I suspect that the one
may assist. I think the file that was sent to us was saved incorrectly as the CIDB report. That file must just be renamed in the database.
Great.
Okay. No,
thank you. With that correction made, Honorable Dango moved for the adoption of the minutes. Can you get a second up?
I second, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Hai. The minutes, therefore, of the 17th of February are duly adopted. Can we then move to the minutes of the 24th of February? Let's wait for the committee secretary to let them. The attendance, are we happy? There you are, Honorable Aplenty. This time you are drilling today. Thank you, other members. Any correction on the remarks? This was a briefing by the Ports Regulator of South Africa on its annual report. Are we happy with how the comment and deliberation is captured, which indeed is a part of the input that was made?
Thank you,
Chair.
I'll move for the minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Professor. Can you get a second?
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Mushodi, I second.
Thank you, Honorable Mushodi, for seconding. Therefore, the minutes of the 24th of February are actually adopted.
Can I just check if we have received the written responses? If you remember, we were asking for the budget speech on that afternoon, but then you suggested to the board chairperson and the CEO that the questions that were not responded to should be responded to in writing. Just want to check if we have received the responses. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable
Vice.
Committee Secretary?
Thank you, Chairperson. So far, we haven't received any requested information from the entity.
Okay.
And I will take a follow-up with the department in that regard.
Thank you, Committee Secretary, for committing to making a follow-up on the responses that were not given on that day because of the pressure that we had. Honorable members, this brings us to the to the last item on the agenda, which is closure. Allow me to take this opportunity to indeed express our appreciation to the job well done by honorable members in terms of holding indeed the Center for Innovation, the public service accountable. They are on the right track, and I think we must keep on holding them to hold the fort. What is quite important is it's the commitment that the honorable members are displaying in terms of ensuring that our meeting at all times are not cancelled because of lack of quorum. We have never anticipated or encountered that. So therefore, I think your discipline must be commended, and also the team, the committee secretary and the researcher, and the assistant committee secretary for ensuring that at all times we have the material on time to do startup preparations. Therefore, honorable members, the meeting is therefore adjourned. Thank you, honorable members.
Thank you very much, honorable chair.
Thank you, Deputy Chair.
Thank you. We're enjoying you, Mafike.